I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Free speech. Is it a blessing or is it a curse? Seems like a very simple question. The First Amendment and free speech is a very, very powerful part of being an American. It has been part of our tradition since our forefathers enshrined it into the Constitution to make sure that our rights that are given to us from our Creator hold up over the course of time, and that's the purpose of the Constitution. The beauty of it is that it allows us to express what we believe. We can talk about whatever we believe. We can gather together and protest things we don't like. We're supposed to have a free media. And you can argue today that the free press or the media is biased. And personally, I think they are. I think they're biased to the left. But the reality is that's not the government making them be biased to the left. They've chosen to do that. The beauty of free speech and the First Amendment is that the freedom of the press also includes other outlets that we have to express our points of view and things we believe, like America Out Loud. This network is dedicated to free expression of ideas and people bringing up their points of view and talking. So that's a really tremendous thing that we have. So I ask, what is the power of free speech? The power of free speech is there because words mean things. The power of words and speech can elevate us. It can inspire us as human beings and as a species. I think back and think of Dr. King, and no matter what you think about Dr. King as a person, I didn't know him, so I can't draw a judgment. But that speech, that I Have a Dream speech, has always moved me to see he was calling to our better angels as a people. He was telling us who we could be, how we could be brothers and love each other, and it could be a tremendous place. That is inspiring and elevating with speech. On the other side of that, free speech and words can cause hurt and pain and anxiety. I think about bullying. There are kids today, young kids, for the first time we're seeing young kids killing themselves because things people say to them. Social media, they curse them, they go after them. This is the negative power of free speech. So you have the two sides. You can elevate humanity or you can tear it down. And I look for examples recently. Not too long ago, we had the correspondents' dinner. This is when the media people and the politicians get together and they talk about, you know, what's going on in the world. It gives them a chance to break down some of those walls that are there. The newspaper people and the TV news people, they can poke fun at the president and the administration. And at the same time, the administration can poke fun at the press. The president can poke fun at other people. And they do it in a lighthearted way. It kind of brings us together. That event has been going on for years and years and years, and it's always been very respectful. President Trump won't go because the media has shown how negative and how hate speech oriented they are, especially towards him. There was a comedian out there, and I won't give her the time of day. She came out and she attacked Sarah Sanders, the president's spokeswoman. She is a very powerful, strong woman. She's articulate, intelligent, and in my opinion, she's a great example for all of us. But this person came out and attacked her over her looks. Now, when you attack somebody over their looks, you got to say, what can that person do about it? I look in the mirror every day, and I wish it was Tom Cruise looking back at me, but it's not. It's Joe Pangaro looking back at me. So there's nothing really I can do about my looks. Now, sure, we can get our hair cut differently. We can wear different clothes. We can try things. But the reality is, the face that looks back in that mirror is your God-given appearance. There's nothing you can do about it. So picking on somebody because of their appearance and how they look, their face is because it's just as bad to me as picking on someone for their ethnicity or their race. There's nothing they can do about that. I also look and I see Dr. Ronny Jackson. The man is an admiral. He has dedicated his life to this country. He's been the personal physician of President Trump, President Obama, and other presidents. He has always been seen as a great man, a great doctor, and a wonderful human being. President Trump puts him up to lead the VA, and the press destroys him and comes after this man. He's wrecked cars. He comes to work intoxicated. All of this is completely unproven. Doesn't matter, though. They've destroyed this man. He removed his nomination, and he has stepped away. So in a minute, we're going to have a little neighborhood roundtable here. I'm going to bring some people together and we're going to talk about this. But first, I want to talk about my sponsors. Very important to me. If you need electronic type of stuff, you know, safety, security things, I found this tremendous company out there, A-Plus Technology and Security. They're out of Bayshore, New York. They have solutions for everything you can imagine. Door locks, notification systems, and the people there really care about their customers. I like them, and I'm going to ask you if you need anything like that, take a look at aplustechnology.com. Fantastic. The other sponsor I want to talk about right now, to my brother and sister law enforcement officers, we are always looking for what's new in our world. We're always looking for what's new and going in law enforcement, the voices of law enforcement, the stories, case updates, all that kind of stuff. There's a great magazine out there for you now. It's nationwide. It's called Blue Magazine. It's free. It's online. All you have to do is look it up. www.thebluemagazine.com. Tremendous for law enforcement. If you love somebody in law enforcement, you want to be in law enforcement, go take a look. I think you'll really enjoy it. So here we go. Round one. Our neighborhood roundtable. I'd like to introduce my guests tonight. I have Mr. Bill Dallas. Bill is a man of faith and conviction. He's a Vietnam vet, and I thank him and I thank all vets for all of their service that they've given, whether you're serving now or you've served in the past. Fantastic. And next to him is Mr. Jack Patterson. Jack is a patriot. Jack is a husband, a father, and Jack is the backbone of America. Jack is the kind of man that makes America work. So I'm thrilled to have these guys here with me. Gentlemen, welcome to Chasing Justice.
Great to be here, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
So you heard my opening, and what I'd like to talk about, I guess the question I want to throw out there for you to consider is our current discourse, the way we speak to each other, the things that are going on, personally, you know, on your small scale, in your neighborhood, around your home, in the food store, on the highway, and nationwide, the things that are going on in our country, is this kind of discourse, is this raising us up as a people, or is this tearing us down? Jack, what do you think?
Honestly, I think it's an adjustment period in this country. With all the information that's currently available, it's causing a lot of confusion. A lot of people are being told what's happening instead of disseminating what's happening themselves. Of course, free speech, as you were discussing before, always has to be both sides of the coin. We have to protect both sides of free speech, whether we like it or not.
Well, sure. Well, do you see this nasty type of discourse in your personal life? Do you see it around
where
you live?
It comes through. It comes through in the way that people drive, in the way that people behave. If you're having a private conversation and somebody overhears and you might be speaking about the president or something that's going on currently, you'll hear somebody him and haw in the background disagreeing with you. Where this is something that you never would have heard before.
A lack of respect.
A lack of respect in general, yes.
Okay. Bill, how about you? You're out and about in the world.
I just love the fact that this is a country that where we can say pretty much anything we want and feel like we're expressing our own opinion. But there's so many other groups, and it's groups, it's not necessarily individuals, that are trying to shout down people for expressing those views. And when you talk about, abortion, or whether you're pro-abortion or you're against abortion, everybody has a right. You may not agree to that other person's opinion, but we should be allowed to be free to express that and not worry about being attacked for it.
Right. I think, well, there's a good point. You can go out and say what you want, but normally there was a consequence for saying anything you wanted. You might have a problem at work. You might have a problem. Your friends might not talk to you. Now, somebody might come and hit you over the head because they don't like your opinion. Jack, do you want something to say?
I just feel that a lot of people are not listening to both sides of every conversation. They're not listening to both sides of every disagreement and picking out the truth for themselves. They're believing what they are being told, mostly by the media, and or, of course, by friends. And instead of making up their own mind and listening to both sides, unfortunately, they're going with what they're being told as the truth.
Right. I think what I see is people get locked in nowadays. They're locked into their position. And, you know, the facts be damned. I don't care. I believe this. And no matter what, I'm going to continue to say that.
Unfortunately, many people feel that they have to classify themselves as a liberal or a conservative. And of course, not too many moderates out there. Everybody wants to pick a side. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that we feel that we have to classify ourselves as such.
Okay. Bill, go ahead.
And Jack, what you said before about listening, I think that is one of the most important things when it comes to free speech. Because if you don't listen to what the other person has to say, then it's not free speech. I mean, you're trying to shout them down. And when you're trying to, you need to get your point across. It's all point and counterpoint. I want to express my point. You can express your point. Just let me do it.
And that's how we gain or lose ground on an argument. Is exactly. That I listen to what you have to say. Maybe you got valid points, so I back off of mine. That goes to there's a saying that we use in public speaking and in speaking when you do programs, is that people listen to respond. They don't listen to understand. You start saying something, and I immediately start thinking of my comeback. I'm not listening to words you're saying. I'm gonna throw my thing out there.
They're not listening to learn, but they are listening to what I like to call verbal bullying. Is what goes on in the media today, and generally what you hear. People are making other people's minds up for them.
Right. Mm-hmm. So now, if we look at that, and Bill, you brought that up. You said it. You know, it's out there in the media. Does the media that we have today, does it help or hurt this spiraling downward discourse that we have in the country?
Today, the media is so biased, and they're supposed to be able to give a point of view that isn't biased.
They're supposed to report. I showed up at the thing. There was a parade. There was clowns. There was guys walking with dogs. It was fantastic. Instead, they tell you why the people in the parade hated the people in the parade down the block.
Exactly right. And they point out the flaws in what's going on rather than building them up and applauding the fact that they're out there doing things.
Sure.
I happen to agree with Bill, and I believe that if we still had reporters such as those who remember Huntley and Brinkley back in the old days, they simply read the news. What you thought of what was going on or the decisions that you made were not made by them or influenced by them. They simply read what was occurring at that time.
Mm. Okay, so I have to look at that and say, we say the media is biased, it's to the left, it's doing all these horrible things, but then there is an outlet like this, like America Out Loud, where we get to sit around, have a neighborhood conversation about our world. I think that's a positive.
Once again, free speech.
That's exactly what it is.
But free speech comes in a lot of different forms. You have kids now wearing T-shirts that have all sorts of foul language on it. And because the administration is saying, well, it's free speech, they're allowed to wear things that are vulgar and stuff like that.
But you know what they're not allowed to wear? They're not allowed to wear an American flag if it offends somebody, because that disrupts the school.
Or they're not allowed to say have anything on there that has to do with Christianity or their faith.
Did you ever think you'd see a day when the American flag would offend people to the point that they want to be angry, rip the flag down, or fight somebody because they're wearing an American flag? It's unbelievable. So this leads me to the next follow-up to this. Is this penchant for destroying people and for always taking the negative side as opposed to the positive, is that going to prevent us from going forward as a nation? I've said we're at the crossroads, or we're approaching the crossroads. How does this type of speech problem we're having now, does that push us further towards this different world, or does it help us to maintain America as we always known it?
I think with the leader that we have, in President Trump, I think we're going in the right direction. And I think that as long as President Trump keeps going in the way he's going, I think we're headed in the right direction.
Okay. I listen to this and I say, Jack, have you ever listened to a speech that's inspired you? I talked about Dr. King. Have you ever listened to a speech or someone that is in the public eye that inspires you? I know that speech really opened my eyes as a young person. And I was trying to figure out who I was, what I was about. And then I heard the speech in its entirety. As a kid, I always heard parts of it. You know, you hear this, you hear that. As I got a little older, one day I just happened to be listening to the entire thing, and I was mesmerized by the beauty in that man's words. There's no doubt he's going to be in the pantheon of great Americans, greater than he is now, as history writes the story of someone who did call us to our greater angels. Bill, you've been in the military, and you've been out and about. You've seen a lot of presidents. Mm-hmm. And what about you? Who have you seen that's inspired you?
The most famous quote I can hear in my head all the time when you think about something like this is when Reagan said, "Mr. Gorbachev, take down that wall."
That was amazing. I remember that myself.
That was an inspiration to people all around the world, not just for the people on one side of the wall, but on both sides.
Well, and that brings, go ahead, Jack.
When President Reagan first took office and we had hostages, as he was being sworn in, those hostages were being released because of the speech that he made before he was inaugurated.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And also George Bush, after 9/11, that we were going to find these people who were responsible and they were going to be punished for it.
Right. Well, that's interesting part of free speech, because we look and we say Barack Obama came out and he appeased these terrible people in the world. He spoke nicely to them. He gave them billions of dollars, gave the Iranians billions of dollars so that they wouldn't build a bomb. Do we all believe that they're not building a bomb, that we're not getting played like we got played by the North Koreans all these years? Then you get a guy like Trump. He comes along and he speaks his mind. He could sit right at this table with us and speak like a guy in the neighborhood. And basically what he says, you're going to build a bomb, we're going to come and get you. And you see what's happened. All of a sudden, this guy decides, maybe I shouldn't be building bombs. Maybe I should at least go to the table and talk. Mm-hmm. It's, I hate to say it, the cliche, but peace through strength. We talk about Reagan and the man that did a thing like that. When he went to Reykjavik and he sat down with Gorbachev and he didn't like it, what did he do? He got up and he walked out. That's speech also. That's an action by a person. Weakness really does not put your enemies in a position to respect you. They don't go, you know, Bill's being so nice to me, I think maybe I won't kill everybody over there. That's ridiculous. It's strength that people respect.
It's also the passion. You know, even though I don't agree with him, I think that the time when Khrushchev took his shoe off and was banging on the table telling us he was going to destroy us, that's passion in what he believes in. I don't agree with it.
But it made us move forward.
But that's exactly right.
Okay, gents, that was very nice. So, listen, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's look at some of the most recent events related to illegal and legal immigration, especially what's going on down at the border and things we can look forward to. So, we'll be right back.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We're going to spend a little time now on another justice-related type of an issue. Let's talk about the migrant caravan that we've seen coming through South America, through Mexico, coming up to the American border. Now, the open borders that we've had for such a very, very long time in our country has been problematic at the very least. There's no doubt about it. People are coming across. They're pouring across. Statistics that will jump out now and say, oh, you know what? So many people are not coming now. They're not coming because for the last 8 years, we've had a really poor economy and there was nothing for them to come here for. When we have a good economy, people start moving. Our economy's picking up. People are starting to come. I also think it's a political football. I think a lot of these countries south of our border are trying to throw this in the face of President Trump, and they're being assisted in this by people on the left in America that want to use immigration as a way to change the voting groups in our country. Not necessarily who the people are, just that they're going to vote to the left. And that's what they want. They're free votes. Bring them in. They'll vote for us because we let them come in. So I start to think about immigration and the value that it has. My great-grandfather is an immigrant. He came here with waves and waves of other people. From Italy and my mother's side, they came from Ireland, and they came here in waves of people. But when they came here, a couple things were different. Number one, the country needed people, right? We're a big, vast country, and we did not have enough people. You know, immigration brings you new people, and with that, you get new businesses. New people create demands. It creates a vibrant culture. It's great when people come in and do that. We're in a different place in 2018. We have some difficulties. So when I look at the difficult side of immigration, I have to see the illegal immigration. It creates lower wages for our American workers because you got people that in a job that should pay $20 an hour, they're willing to take $8 an hour cash. So taxes don't go into the federal government revenue, which everybody needs to do the things we need the government to do. And the people who wouldn't be getting 20 bucks an hour can't get it because the wages are lowered. It uses resources that in 2018, we do not have in abundance, our health care. And look how expensive health care is. For people to come in and just show up and all of a sudden they can have any kind of health care that they need. Now, I don't blame them for wanting the operations they need, the health care that they need for their children that they can't get maybe in their home country. But that's going to create a couple of questions for us to deal with here. As we get down the road, we're going to talk about, is this our responsibility? Is it our moral responsibility? So I'm glad we got the man of faith here to kind of give us a little bit of a point of view. But the other thing that having illegal immigration causes is the security risks. And I don't care who people are out there. I'm from law enforcement. And I can tell you, you talk to those people on the border. There is drugs coming over that border. There is people coming over that border. If somebody wanted to attack our country, all you got to do is get into one of these southern countries and you walk across the American southern border. And you can bring with you anything you can use to hurt us. You get over that border and you have a suitcase full of, the worst thing in the whole world, the AR-15. And you just walk to the closest town and shoot the place up. Who's going to stop you from doing that? Maybe you have a suitcase bomb and you're not from one of them southern countries. Maybe you're from somewhere where they have availability of those things and they want to hurt us. So they come there and they pay the right person and they slip right through and they're going to blow us up. So the security risks are real. And the people who want this uncharted, unstoppable immigration, they want it for political reasons and they're not looking at the realities of what it's doing to us. And that is a danger to all of us. So I think what I want to throw out there is this. What do you think about the current form of illegal immigration? Do we allow it to continue? Do we try and slow it down? Or do we try and stop it completely?
A quick counterpoint to that is simply this. These people mainly, as I understand it, have come from Central and South America. They've come up to the Mexican-American border seeking asylum here for political and or religious persecution that has not been proven, which is a prerequisite for entering this country as a citizen to prove this persecution is real.
Sure, absolutely. And you know what? That kind of makes sense because do we want to turn away people? If there was a raging war in Mexico where they were killing certain people in their own country and they could make it to the border, it would be ridiculous for us to turn those people away. But we don't know what's going on exactly down there. There's a lot of governments by choice. Unlike America, we didn't like the government that was going on, and we stood up and we changed it. You know, we took the hits, we lost the people, and we turned it into this country. I don't know that they're doing that there. So for these people to just come on up here, I don't know that that's exactly the right thing. Bill?
First of all, you talk about these immigration caravan. First of all, Who organized them to all of a sudden now we've got thousands of these immigrants trying to cross the border. They're all trying to get into that one port of entry, seeking asylum for one reason or another. Why now? Why instead of over the years, it's been a few here, a few there, a couple hundred here, but now there's thousands. What put them all together with the same sense of purpose to now cross and find a port of entry that would be in chaos? And when it's in chaos, the border people there, the officials, are having a hard time processing all of them. And I heard, recently I heard that they were at capacity. So if they're at capacity, they can't push any more people through,
right?
And they don't understand that.
Well, I think they do. I think there's two things you're saying. Number one, who's paying for all of this? Why is the Mexican government allowing them to come through their country, helping them along the way, So there's the political angle to this. They want to move along their people that they can't take care of into America because, you know, the remuneration, the money that people send back to South American countries is in the billions and billions of dollars. It's a mainstay of those governments' income. So they have an interest in moving their people along.
And we don't know what type of people that are coming through. That was the purpose of these port of entries, to interview people, take the time to understand who they are, where they're coming from, the type of possible crimes that they've been involved with. And with the way that it's now, it's chaos and they can't do their job.
Well, because they've already said that the interview and the background check of the people who wish to come into this country can take upwards of a month. My question to people who are on both sides of this issue in thought is, why is the Mexican government not doing more to grant these people asylum and or assimilate them into their society?
Well, that's right. They're saying that they're fine and they're on that side of the border. Why don't they just help them over there instead of pushing them through? This is where the political side is. And Bill, you asked a good question. Why are they doing this now? Why is this happening? Who's doing it? That says to me, wouldn't it be great if we had a free press that would say, hey, here's a question. Why don't we go try and find out the answer of why this is happening? Let's look at who's paying for that train. That train isn't free to move from South America all the way up to the American border. Why don't we go find out who's paid for that? Who's feeding the people along the way?
And where did all of these immigration attorneys come from all of a sudden? They're like ambulance chasers. They're out to make a buck and out to make a name for themselves. Their real purpose is not to help these people. It's to make themselves known, make themselves a name for themselves, and to make money.
Well, sure. You look at the New Jersey governor. He's asking for $2.5 million for attorneys to help undocumented people fight the system. So there's a whole political thing here that the media refuses to look at. We have a limited voice, but here on America Out Loud, we have the opportunity to at least raise the question. Jack, you look like you got something to say.
I wonder sometimes if this is not propagated by those very same lawyers due to the fact that the only way to get into this country, number one, is legally to go through the process, which is very long, very drawn out, and is very limiting to the amount of people who can come in at one time. So the other side of the coin that these lawyers might have brought about for these people is if they declare political asylum or religious asylum, they have a way of getting in mass.
Right, because that's our law. Our law, that they present themselves at the border and say that we got to let them in. So let me ask the question I started with. Bill, simple answer. Do we allow it to continue? Do we try and slow it down? Or do we stop it altogether?
I think we need to change it. I think we need to change the laws to allow President Trump to do the things that he feels is necessary to stop the flow of illegal immigrants.
Right.
Building the wall, whatever else it takes to do
a big, beautiful wall. It would be nice to have it, but it's got a door in it so people can legally come through. Jack, what about you? Keep it the way it is, allow it to continue, you know, slow it down, or do we stop it? What do we do?
There's a process that's already in place, and I think we need to let that process occur. Any other way is unfair. And this comes from a personal friend of mine who immigrated here from Russia. It took him over 3 years to get here and a lot of trouble for him to get here. He came here, wanted to be an American, has worked very hard and has been a good and loyal citizen. He is the one who is more angered than anyone else at what is currently happening because of what he had to go through with his wife.
He did the right thing.
He did the right thing.
And he suffered for the rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. And now other people are cutting the line. And that, there's no justice in cutting the line. That's not fair. That's against our entire being as Americans. But let me ask you this question. Do you think that we can we talk about this honestly? I mean, here at America Out Loud, we're having this conversation. No one's calling us names, but could you imagine if this was on a mainstream media show and we talked about even slowing this down, that making people follow laws, you imagine what would be said about us?
And that goes back to what I said about listening to both sides. I am willing to listen to the people who are pro of bringing these people into this country. I'm not against bringing anybody into this country, but in mass, undocumented, and with no background checks, seems foolhardy to me.
Right. And I think I laid out a whole list of reasons why immigration is good for our country. And it doesn't matter where the people come from. They try and make a big deal about that. Right now, our problem is coming from the southern border.
And the process has always worked.
Right.
And we need to enforce the process.
So let me ask you this question. This is a little more sticky when we get into this, because I like to dive down into here. So we think it's okay for people to come. They do have a value to our country. We just can't have them overwhelm us and take up the resources, the scant resources that we have for the people in our own country. Do we hate these people coming from Mexico and South America?
Absolutely not. Do we hate them? Absolutely not. But as our country is becoming restructured, retail is currently dying. We have to restructure in such a way that jobs will be available as we lose jobs in the retail sector.
Mm-hmm.
And for these people to flux in right now, we're still not at a point where we know where these jobs, these new jobs are going to occur.
Right. Well, we know that the new jobs are going to occur in high-tech industries, high education industries. So are we bringing in, doesn't matter where they're from, are we bringing in groups of people that are uneducated and don't have any skills to a country that doesn't have jobs for them?
You were asking about, do we hate these people? Some of the biggest areas of that is when they're taking away jobs. The labor, they don't even have to be skilled, especially like landscapers. All across the country are hiring these illegals because they'll work cheaper. And when they're when they refuse to work at a lower wage, they get threatened with being reported for the immigration. So they don't want to be found out. So yeah, some of these companies, these small employers, are looking at that, and they hate that whole system because they can't survive without a lower pay scale.
Well, I'm going to tell you, for me personally, I don't hate them. I don't hate anybody. I could care less if they're minority groups. I don't care if they're from Mexico, if they're from Italy. Come here with something to offer the American country. Come here legally. I understand. Could you imagine if I couldn't feed my family and there was nothing to do? I would do anything to take care of my family. I would go to Canada if that's where the work was. So I understand what these people are doing. But that brings up my next question. Is it our responsibility as America to welcome in anybody who manages to get here because we got stuff? Is it our responsibility to take them in and take care of the world?
Once again, we've made a promise before the whole world, even on our statue in New York Harbor. There's a promise that we will take you in. But once again, I'm going to revisit this. There's a process. And the process has to be respected, and the process has to be upheld.
And Jack, I'm going to disagree with you just a little bit on that. The poem that's on the Statue of Liberty is not a governmental poem. That's a poem that was written and placed on there, and it spoke to the concept of America. We will take you in. We'll take the people that can't live, people that come here where we can all be great. But when you come here, you become American. You adopt our traditions. You adopt what our life is all about, to make the whole country better for everybody, a great big melting pot of everyone.
That's true, but my premise was to honor that idea, was to honor that thought.
Correct.
And for the people to come here, I totally agree. Come here to be an American, come here to be proud to be an American, and come here to be a contributing citizen.
Okay.
You spoke about your friend from Russia. I have a whole family of friends that I've known for over 20 years, from Sri Lanka. They came here escaping civil war in their own country. They had a long process to go through to get here. Our church helped them with some of that, and they were able to get to, the father was able to get to this country. He saved up every penny he earned, and he worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day for years, and he finally saved up enough money to bring his family through India to this country. And when they were here, they had three sons, his wife and the husband. They all worked every single day. They were taken advantage of by some of their own people in some of the areas that where they worked. But eventually, they've all become U.S. citizens. Two of the boys became Maryland State Troopers.
And I met them. They're wonderful people. They really are. Yeah. So let me, before we're closing down to this this segment, let me ask real careful. Is it our moral obligation to take these people in? If it's not just a thing we should do because it's nice that we have this responsibility, is it our moral obligation?
It is. If they want to become citizens in this country, which is what my friends did, they went through the right way to do it. I believe it is a moral responsibility to allow anyone who wants to enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy.
So they can just walk over the border and it's our moral
issue. No. They come through the border the right way.
They come through the door in the great, big, beautiful
Trump. They come and they knock and they say, come on in, but you got to abide by our rules. You got to speak our language. You got to do the right thing. You got to work and you got to contribute.
That's fantastic. I think we all agree with that. Gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to go to round three. There's something that I wanted to talk about in law enforcement. There's some things that have happened to me, and it happens to lots of cops in the course of their careers. We see things and we do things that really change our lives. I've written a lot of articles about it. They're going to appear on the America Out Loud page that I'll have set up pretty soon. My articles are on there. But specifically tonight, I want to talk about one specific thing that happened to me, an article called Faces from the Past, about a young man and his journey through life and how we collided together. I want to get to that when we get back. Right now, I want to talk about a couple more of my sponsors here. If you have a internet technology, and we all have computers, we have our workstations, everything in our businesses, our whole lives function on an internet technology. If you're looking for an IT support company, third-party maintenance, someone that can come in, when your stuff breaks, you call them, they come in and fix it. How nice would that be? Every time the computer goes down, you call somebody, they come and fix it, right? A friend of mine, Michael Kakuza, has a tremendous company. It's called Emcon IT, E-M-C-O-N-I-T. So you can reach out to them at emconit.com. They have cost-effective hardware maintenance and other solutions that I don't know anything about, but they know everything about. If you have all of that IT at your business, give them a call. I'm also going to talk to you about my company, Pangaro Security Consulting and Training. What I do, and I've been doing for many years, is I teach law enforcement officers, I teach school personnel and business people how to keep themselves and their people safe and secure. So if you go to my website, jpangaro.com, the letter J, P-A-N-G-A-R-O.com, you take a look, you'll see what I'm all about. We'll be back in a minute.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, welcome back. Here we go to round three. I was saying as we took our break there that the articles that I write, I started writing the column Behind the Badge many years ago because I thought I had something to say about law enforcement. I thought I saw things in a way that maybe other cops saw, but really was not what you would consider how police officers saw things and did them. And I know my civilian friends didn't understand what I was doing. They had no idea what it was like to go out on patrol on the midnight shift, be all alone in your car, stop in a car in the middle of a highway somewhere, and it's you. It's you and whoever's in that car. And I can't tell you how many times I was in a pursuit, got out, was chasing somebody through backyards, doing whatever. And as I'm running, trying to chase this person, you start to realize you're completely on your own here. And you could lose your life. And I start to think about my wife and kids at home. I'm saying, you know, this is an unbelievable thing I've gotten involved in. But you got the adrenaline going, so you go. The other things that happen to you, and we'll talk about them in this kind of a segment as we go. It'll be the behind the badge type of thing. This article, Faces from the Past. really moved me as a human being. I was probably 30 years old. I was a detective. I was all excited to be a detective. I loved everything about questioning people and dealing with people on the psychological level, not just jumping out of cars, pulling out of the vehicles and searching them, which that was great fun for many years. I loved patrol division. But the detective bureau was different. It allowed me to explore a different side of myself. So we had this this young man, and I'm going to call him Mark Smith, you know, for lack of using his real name. Mark Smith was a young, handsome, nice kid. And I say nice kid in the way that if you met him at a party and you sat and talked to him, you'd probably really like him. He was fun. He was outgoing. He spoke very well for himself. He had a great sense of humor. And I know that because after I arrested him, we had many conversations, actually, along the way, too. So what he was doing, his whole thing was that he did street robberies. He would pick on people who were weaker than him, people that were probably afraid of him because he was a bigger guy. He was pretty well built. And what he would do is drive around in his girlfriend's car, and she would do the driving. He'd sit in the passenger seat, and they'd see some young kid, some 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, walking up the side of the road, and the car would stop, and Mark would jump out of the car and run over to the kid and say, hey, you stole that coat and that necklace from my friend's house. You know, you better give it back. They're going to come and get you. And the kid, what are you talking about? I didn't steal a coat. And he might punch him. He might just rip the coat off the guy's back, take the necklace, go through his pockets or whatever, jump in the car and take off. This is traumatic and violent, especially for these young people. You know, they have no idea. Who is this guy stopping me? Who does that? Anybody ever been victimized like that? Have somebody beat you, punch you, and violate you like that? So this was, even though it's a street robbery, it was very violent to these kids. So we had a series of these between my town and the next couple towns over. And it became evident that it was the same guy. Well, one thing led to another, and I ended up identifying this Mark Smith. And I put a warrant out for his arrest. Well, in the meantime, while I had the warrant out for him, he committed... Now he moved to armed robberies with a handgun, where he was robbing drug dealers, and he was robbing regular people like at motels. You stay overnight at a motel, you come back, you and your wife are walking in the door, and he comes in behind you with the gun, and he's robbing people in their hotel rooms. So he was getting more violent as time goes by. Well, I put this warrant out, and I had the word out on the street through, you know, informants and people that are out there that help the police do what they do, and I get a phone call one day. And my secretary says, hey, detective, there's a Mark Smith on the phone for you. So I get on the phone. Mark Smith? Yeah, detective, I hear you're looking for me. Mark Smith from Asbury Park? Yeah. Matter of fact, I am looking for you, Mark. I understand you took some kid's jacket and his necklace, and he doesn't understand why you would take his jacket necklace. Dude, I didn't take any jacket and necklace, he tells me. I said, listen, there's no doubt about it. You took the jacket and the necklace. I'm thinking it was probably a mistake, you know, as cops do. I'm trying to do the right thing with the kid and, you know, calm him down a little bit. Let him just turn yourself in. We'll straighten this out. Now, the reality is, if you use force on somebody in New Jersey, as in most places, when you take their stuff, that's a robbery. Robbery is not a theft. Robbery is very serious. So I was trying to downplay this to get the kid to at least tell me where he was. We had cops searching for him all over. But he wasn't the kind of guy that had, like, a house, you know, where he went home to every day like you and me. He didn't get mail anyplace. He lived wherever he could live. So he was all over the community. And he convinced me that he was going to turn himself in, and then he didn't. And I talked to him on the phone again, and he would say he'd turn himself in, and he wouldn't. And I'd walk in, and it got to be funny. I was off on Mondays, and I'd walk in on Tuesday, and my secretary would be waving a stack of messages at me. Mark left you a bunch of messages. It actually became a little joke around the office. So the last time I tried to convince him in, and it didn't work, I kind of thought maybe at some point he'll get arrested. And lo and behold, less than a week later, I get a call from the Asbury Park police. Hey, we locked up this Mark Smith over here on your warrant. You want to come and get him? I went over and I got the guy, and I brought him back. And that's when I had a chance to sit down and talk to him. And when you look at the street robberies, it wasn't like he was killing people, but I think he was heading in that direction when he started using the gun. And he was a 26-year-old, vibrant, handsome young man. He had the life ahead of him. He was smart. He was intelligent. He was all of that. But he chose this life of crime. Now, I don't know why he chose a life of crime. It's where he grew up. It's his background. It's him at his soul. I have no idea. But he chose to do this. Well, in New Jersey, we have what's called three strikes and you're outlaw. If you commit three violent crimes, and a robbery is considered a violent crime, if you commit three violent crimes, you will go to prison for the rest of your life without parole. Now, the other part of this is that Mark had a previous robbery conviction when he was 18, and he did a couple years in jail. So here he is now. I have him on at least two of these incidents, and he has a couple of incidents with the gun. So my trial is first. We get him convicted on the first one. Then he went to another town where he was convicted with the gun and the robbery of something else. That's strike two, because, you know, the courts want to forget about that first one because it was so long ago. So we're going to count these three. Then my trial is last, and we have this trial, and he's convicted again. And this young man, this vibrant young man with a life in front of him, is sentenced to life without parole. He is now going to go to prison and sit there for the rest of his natural life. He's going to die in that cell. The next time he's going to get out of that cell is when he's on a gurney as they're pulling him out. Well, initially, I kind of dealt with that. I said, hey, we got a bad guy off the street. We had a good trial. We were successful. That was really wonderful. And I really didn't give it much thought after that. I slept like a baby. I did my job. I did the right thing. I felt I did society's job, what they put me out there for. About 10 years down the road, maybe 11 years down the road, I had received some information from somebody asking me a question. They said, hey, didn't you work on that Mark Smith robbery back in the day? And we were talking about it. And it got me to thinking. I was sitting at my computer, and we can look up the Department of Corrections on the computer. You can actually go there and see prisoners. You can see their picture. You can see how long they're in for, the crimes they committed. And I was sitting there, you know, regular day. I said, oh, yeah, Mark Smith. I haven't thought about him in a long time. Let me pop him up. So I go in the computer, and this picture pops up. And I'm remembering this kid as this handsome, vibrant young man who had the whole world in front of him, even though he chose the wrong path. He had the whole world in front of him. But the picture that popped up, the picture that I looked at, was not the face from the past that I remembered. The picture that popped up was a 37-year-old man who was now showing the signs of the stress and the pain and the horrors of everything that goes on in prison. And he's staring back at me. You can see he's wearing the prison garb. And I'm looking at this guy. And I really was shocked to my soul to realize that he's there because I did my job. Now, I'm not saying he didn't deserve it. He did all the actions. I'm not that kind of a guy to think, so it's my fault. I did my job. I did the right thing. But to actually see his face and to see that and realize that at 36 years old, 37 years old, if he just lives out the natural life of an American male, he's going to be in that cell for another 35 or 40 years. I'm going to be, you know, retired. I'd be moving on. I'd be doing whatever. My kids, grandchildren would be born. And every one of those days, he's going to be sitting in a cell somewhere, hoping to eat and drink at the will of whoever's in charge of him. It was very, very painful. And I realized that this work can take a toll on people. It can take a terrible toll on people. I had to really think my way through that. I had to pray on that, you know, for what people, when they say it, did I do the right thing? And I got over that and I accept it. But there is a human side to cops. There's a very human side to people when we get involved in these things and we do it. It's your heart. It's your inside. You know, we all look on TV and you see cops on TV. That's nonsense, what you see, you know, jumping out and screaming. Everybody's cool. Everybody knows what they're doing. Cops are just people. And we do our job every single day. When you see a child that's been brutalized, when you see an old person that's been brutalized, when you see the face of somebody you've put in prison for the rest of their life, that reverberates through your own soul. And Mark Smith, if you're out there somewhere and you're listening, I hope you turned your life around. I hope you find some value in what you're doing. And I hope you're well. But that's the face from the past. And there's many more of these out there. And we'll talk about them as we go a little bit further. One of the things that kind of leads into that. Right now, I guess I'm talking about PTSD for law enforcement. And there's a big problem with PTSD in our military personnel. So my transition here is actually along the same lines of this. I felt a little PTSD as I walked through this story, but our military people, right now they're telling us that 22 military service personnel a day are killing themselves, suicide. from PTSD. This is a horrific statistic. These are the men and women, the young men and women who went out there to protect us, to do the right thing. And they're coming home and they're committing suicide. It's absolutely horrible. So one thing that law enforcement is doing, and I've seen it on a lot of social media, and I think it's really great. There's a thing that they're doing out there called the 22 Kill Challenge. Now, if you and your agency are not doing it, look it up on social media and see it. You get all your cops together and they promise to do 22 push-ups for 22 days to bring awareness of the fact that these service personnel are killing themselves. So say a prayer for them and try and do a 22 kill challenge maybe, and put it on social media. People will like it. Here we have my friend Bill, the man of faith. And Bill, you were in the service. You served there. You served in Vietnam, and we've talked in the past here on Chasing Justice about the due that you and Vietnam veterans were not given. Did you see a lot of PTSD in the men and women you served with?
I think most of the trauma that comes from that insidious disease, and it is a disease, comes from combat and the things that we're asked to do in combat. I've been fortunate. I've never had to be in a position where there was in a combat situation. I served on an aircraft carrier out in the ocean, and that was about as far from combat as you can get, other than the pilots taking off and on bombing runs and stuff. But I think that one of the biggest things when it comes to this sort of these numbers, I wish I knew what those numbers were comprised of, because a lot of them happen when they're in service, when they're still on the front lines. A lot of these guys are taking their lives for one thing or another. Yes, a lot of them do come home, and for one thing or another, they're depressed. They miss the action. They miss their comrades. They've seen a lot of horrible things. They've seen their best friends die in horrific ways. And that does tell on people. I mean, if you're human, if you have some sort of compassion for people, it's going to affect you. And a lot of guys just can't handle that. And they bring a lot of that with them into the service before this. So a lot of things that make up PTSD is their environment growing up, their environment while they're on the front lines, and their environment when they come home. It's the way they're brought up. And I don't know, it's such a horrible thing. And I'm just thankful that President Trump has made a promise to revamp the Veterans Administration, get rid of the dead wood, and bring about a complete change so that veterans can get a fair shake. They can get taken care of. I had a particular situation where recently I wanted to just apply for VA benefits after I've been out of the service since 1968. And I never took advantage of those benefits because I never really needed them. And then someone talked about hearing aids. I went and applied, and I found out that I wasn't eligible. Now, how could I possibly not be eligible? I served our country. I was a veteran, and I was told that I didn't meet the requirements. And that was just a deadline that I missed, I guess. But President Trump hopefully will change all that.
Well, I'm hoping so. And one of the things that I see is, as we're getting close to the end of our program, I want to thank you for your service. I want to thank all the men and women out there that are listening to us on Chasing Justice. Thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for your families. And from my heart, thank you very much for everything you do. You know, I was a cop and I was out there trying to protect the streets, but you were out there protecting the world. You sacrificed for all of us. You gave up your things. You gave up your family. Your family gave you up. And we can't thank you enough. And I know every time I see a service person, whenever I'm out, I always take a minute to go and thank them, because I don't know that they hear it enough. You know, I grew up when they weren't nice to Vietnam vets, and that bothered me as a kid. So I always say thank you. And I'm going to urge you, everybody out there, you see a service person, say thank you. It's really the right thing to do. And you sleep in freedom because they're out there doing the right thing. We're getting close to the end here, and I want to talk real quickly about something that's good with the military. You said President Trump is going to turn the VA around. Well, I think the Dr. Jackson could have helped that, but one of the things I always thought of, and I'm going to put this idea out there, is that there should be just a medical card that they get that's good at every single hospital and every single doctor in the country. And all they have to do is show up and drop that card on a table, and the doctor takes them. Any hospital goes in and fixes them. Why do they have to go to these hospitals that are not proper care? They're overwhelmed. They have to drive 70, 80 miles to go somewhere. Walk to your local doctor, throw the card down, and get the service. You served our country. We should now take care of you. And I'm hoping he does something like that.
Just like anything else, that card can be counterfeited. That card can be used unscrupulously. If they can counterfeit a driver's license, they can certainly counterfeit that. They've got to find other ways than just that.
I think they got to find something. Jack, got anything to add there as we're closing out on a free speech?
I absolutely believe that medical card would be a fantastic idea, as well as first choice for any civil service job for veterans. And let's remember, as they're sitting on top of that wall, taunting the Border Patrol and everything that the country stands for, there's veterans coming home paralyzed. They're coming home dead. Fought for this country and fought for all the people in this country.
Let's show them respect. Let's show them thank you.
Absolutely.
I want to say thank you very much to our sponsors. We have MCON IT at MCONIT.com, Pangaro Security Consultant and Training. That's me. You can give me a call. We'd also like to thank thebluemagazine.com, and of course A+ Technology and Security at aplustechnology.com. I'd like to hear from you, Jay Pangaro at America Out Loud, and give us an email. Let us know what's going on, and remember, go out there and be part of the solution, not part of the problem. See you soon.